Welcome to the Game Room Podcast. This is the Lefty, your host, co-host, master of ceremonies. We are on our way home from work and figured I'd give you a little bit of input into what transpired last Saturday if you weren't on the stream. And I do want to point out that the stream was awesome and I only had like six people watching at one point. I was kind of a little depressed. We did Tekken Tag 2. You know that's usually my main games, Tekken Tag 2, and I ended up having two co-hosts slash, special guests. We had Monstroso and Johnny Bravo, who are two of the best Tekken players in the Seattle Tekken group. Very solid players, very helpful, very knowledgeable guys, really cool. And they ended up helping me out with some really cool diagrams that I'm going to share with you guys. And you can also download them from me or ask them on my email. And I'll get those for you at the end here. So we did a lot of law practice. We did some solo games. We did some pair play, which was a lot of fun online. So we were pair playing against some really good players. And we won a few. Johnny Bravo and I won a few of them. It was pretty good. Just kind of goofing, showing off the arcade, showing off the game room, showing off, some cerebral stuff, just formulating game plans, talking about matchups, a lot of really good, interesting information if you were into the whole fighting game thing. If you're into Tekken especially, it's really good information. And, if you're just kind of starting out in the game and you just want to watch some better players play, or you just want to see what certain moves or certain thought processes are going through players' minds when they're playing, it was a very good stream. I thought it was very cool. It was about 2.5-3 hours long, and it's broken up into two parts, so it's not too overwhelming. But I really enjoyed it. I think the guys enjoyed themselves quite a bit, and I think they're going to be back again sometime. So we had a good time. I didn't have the mics all set up for all three of us to chat. I just had the headset that we just kind of all talked into and kind of shared back and forth. But it was a lot of fun. But the diagrams, we were talking about the diagrams here. Johnny Bravo calls it his flux capacitor, like from the movie Back to the Future, because it's awesome. Basically, there's two triangles drawn on the sheet of paper, and each one signifies a type of game. Okay, within the game, the meta, if you want to call it anything, the meta, which you usually hear in MOBAs a lot, or in MMOs, but for a fighting game, there is a meta, and these are basically the two metas that Johnny Bravo uses in his mind when he's playing. So he has the situation game and the neutral game. So the situation triangle involves movement, pressure, and setups, one on each corner of the triangle, and then blocking in the center. And he has arrows on the lines of the triangle designating, what beats what. So basically, movement beats pressure, pressure beats setups, and setups beat movement. Okay. Then we go to the second triangle, which is the neutral one, the neutral game. And that is a triangle with turtling, mix-ups, and keep-out. And turtling is beats keep-out. Keep-out beats mix-ups, and mix-ups beat turtling. And using that system, he explains that is really how you can, just overlay that onto your normal strategy that you use. And it really helps you with practicing, and it really helps you with picking apart people's defensive weaknesses and offensive weaknesses. He was showing us, and this is on the stream too, he was showing us against a Kuma player how the Kuma player just kept attacking. He never really... he blocked, but he always wanted to instigate offense after a bad situation happened. So he would just jab him in the face on counter hit almost every time, simply because the guy wouldn't stop and wait. And it was really interesting, because using that thought process, it was a really great way to bolster your game and really pick apart your own weaknesses of what you could be doing better or worse than you thought. So, like for me, I'm really bad at the pressure. The pressure and keep out's not too bad. I'm pretty good at keep out with Luz sidestep 3+4 and his magic 4. I'm not too bad at that. But the pressure into mix-ups and the pressure into, the situations and the overall My overall effect in the neutral game with Law is just not very good. So I really have like two parts of the triangle to really focus on. And it's really cool. The triangle, I think, is a really cool way to visualize a way to practice. And I wanted to share that with you guys. And, you know, just also talk about the stream and what we did. We showed off a little bit of X-Men, a little bit of Alien vs. Predator. And we had some quality issues in the stream halfway through because my wife jumped on. And I wasn't quite sure what was causing it. And the system automatically set itself down to 1,000 instead of 2,200 KB or kilobytes or whatever. So, you know, we fixed it halfway through and the quality got a lot better once we kicked the stream up. I think the last hour of it was a much better quality. So just something to just keep in mind. So don't look at it and be like, man, Lefty's a scrub. He has really crappy quality. I didn't realize the quality was auto-set at that point. So anyways... So going back to these triangles, these diagrams, once you get these diagrams in your hand, or you just take what I just told you and write it on a piece of paper or a napkin with crayons or something, I don't know. You got to use an entire fist grip on your crayon, though, and stick your tongue out. You got to be simple. you can basically then write down some of your moves that you think would work in each of those categories. On each of the corners of the or angles of the triangle, you can, you know, put in, like, for example, pressure. Number one pressure move for most players is jabs. You're going to use jabs, down forward ones, you know, fast activating attacks that are mid, preferably safe moves or moves that grant frame advantage is really what you want to have. Moves that counter sidestep are really good to have for pressure, especially if they think movement's the answer to keep trying to beat you. You know, and by doing that, it's like a domino effect. You're able to tap one domino, like jabs, and just go into practice mode or go into online, you know, player matches, even with a character you don't know that well, and just focus on just instigating the pressure, starting up your pressure game. And what I have to stress for players that have never used something like this or really don't know the proper way to get better at Tekken, starting the pressure game does not mean landing a hit for damage. You can start your pressure off a blocked jab because it gives you a frame. And if the jab hits, that's all the better, because that gives you the opportunity to attack again with something else, either another jab or a sidestep to get around a retaliatory move or, you know, whatever. And it's, you know, just that little tidbit can help new players or even seasoned players that have played a long time with their friends that aren't super competitive or in the competitive scene. It really helps. Like, for me, just adding jabs into my game against players online really started fucking them up, because they... So many people online are programmed to be overly offensive. It's not that they're necessarily scrubs. It's just they don't have all the mechanics and understand the meta of the game. They're more concerned about landing their juggle, landing a YOLO hop kick or some sort of panic button move, and going for the maximum damage on a juggle that they can. And then wash, repeat. And that's essentially what you'll see a lot of greens do. And, you know, and that's about where it stops, usually is green. Once you get into blues and reds in the ranks, they usually understand the meta a heck of a lot more, to where, you know, you're able to do more and be more patient, and they actually wait out your misses and your whiffs and your mistakes, and, you know, that's awesome. But when you're in that entry level, when you're in your Dans and you're moving up, and then you're into your original ranks, and you're getting into, like, you know, Marauder and those different areas, that's when you start seeing these players that have just a little bit of understanding. They know their character really well. They know what the best moves are, and they've probably watched some match vids and seen some Let's Plays and seen some streams. And, you know, they know the good players and what their names are. But for the most part, they don't really understand how to apply pressure, how to start their game, how to do footsies properly in this game, how to utilize sidestep off certain frames. You know, just... stuff that, you know, if you're a good player, it's not super, super difficult to just kind of jump in with a new character and just use the fundamentals to win matches. But, like, me especially that night, I was having a hard time just retaining all this information. I actually had to write it down because it was like, this is so fundamentally simple, but so different from my mindset of how to learn the game. And really, you can use this pyramid diagram thing, or triangle diagram, in almost any fighting game. Street Fighter probably can be used in Street Fighter. I'm almost guaranteeing you can. It definitely can be used in, like, Soul Calibur or Virtual Fighter. Definitely Virtual Fighter, because there's just a lot there in that game. It's so deep. But I think it's really important. I think it was really cool. I built these cheap little diagrams in LogoPit, which is, like, a little free app to, like, make custom logos for Facebook and different places. And I just threw them up real quick. I found some random triangles and just spit all this stuff on there. I used some cool 80s, like, computer text. And, I'm going to have them up, and they're going to be on the stream, so you're going to be able to get those there. You're also going to be able to, pull them off the site on my YouTube channel. I can probably send a link to PhotoBucket or something so you guys can get them there. But, it's really useful. I like it. It's definitely not, like, your go-to, this is automatically going to win every time. Not necessarily. And I do want to point that out. There were some hiccups here and there. But for the most part, blocking trumps most everything, unless it's throws, or unblockables or something. But, your movement can really fuck with people. That's a big thing I see a lot, especially with the overly aggressive players. If you want to beat overly aggressive players, either jab to interrupt them and get yourself some offensive capabilities going, or just step their dumb shit. There's so many characters that have such linear attacks. They just throw them out and hope for the best and just expect you to touch buttons so you get counter hit. They fish and bait for counter hit. Bruce does it a lot. Brian baits for counter hit quite a bit. Bob's pretty notorious for it. And all it really comes down to is patience, character knowledge. If you have patience and you understand the fundamentals and you use those coupled with character knowledge, you'd be surprised how much further you'll go and how much easier it is for you to just interrupt and blow people up. It really makes me more interested in the game, because it feels like that plateau's can kind of broken up, so maybe I can start getting a little better from where I was. And it's helpful. I just think it's really helpful. Also, cool announcement. Round one, which is there's three or four different round ones in Washington. It's basically an arcade scene. Very cool. It's one of the only old school arcades left. They are going to be getting Tekken 7 in, like, the next 10 to 15 days. And people have been bugging them for it, like, every couple weeks. And the owner finally threw his hands up and said, okay, we're getting it. We're going to import it so you guys have it. Quit bugging us. We're going to get it. We're going to get it. We're going to get it. So it's been confirmed on their website. If you go to round one, they are getting it soon. It said, I believe, it was going to be coming in December, but not every location has it yet. So, yeah, there you go. Like, 10 to 15 days from today, which is January 10th, we should be able to actually get some Tekken 7, cabinet action. And that gets me really excited because, if we get the cabinet, maybe we're going to have some fresh blood come into the Seattle Tekken scene. So we're going to have new players to play with. They're going to have some new characters to deal with. Looking forward to dealing with just multitudes of new characters and actually getting out back into the arcade scene. I just love the arcade scene. Grew up on it, so we're gonna do that thing. What else? It just really that's it. Just wanted to talk about the guys coming over. It was really fun. Had a lot of Q&A with those guys on the stream. Obviously, they didn't answer too many questions while they're focused on playing people online or while they were playing each other. We did a lot of death matches, just first to three. I'm pretty sure I didn't lose I didn't win a single first to three. I think I won one or two of them straight, and then I get squashed and just, fail. But it was a lot of fun, and it we're going to do it again. It was enjoyable. They had a good time, and I'm hoping I'll improve for next time when they come over. Maybe I'll be able to keep up with them a little bit better. But it is what it is. We'll get there when we get there, so trying to think what else is going on. Let me see, we covered the news, we covered the diagrams, which I think are cool. Oh yeah, flowcharts. We talked a little bit about flowcharting on the stream. I don't know if it was picked up because I think we went into the house at this point for like 5-10 minutes. We're just bullshitting, getting some beers and different things. Flowcharting, if you don't know what it is, it's kind of a basic basic thing to flowcharting. If you don't know what flowcharting is basically once you have your fundamentals down of how things work and why, that's important. A lot of players need to know that. Every player needs to know that. If you get into Tekken and you instantly go on the forums and start copying and pasting how people play and doing it, all this flowchart-related garbage, and you don't understand why you're not getting any better or why certain players keep blowing you up, normally it's because you have to change and modify that flowchart to your opponents. There are a lot of autopilot flowcharts out there for certain characters that, you know, it is what it is. I see a lot of people try to do it. It never really works in tournaments. It definitely doesn't work when you're playing in big competitions physically with people. I tend to see these auto playlists or auto flowcharts online. You see it a lot with Lilies and some other characters. I just called Lily out because I see it like the most. But you know, if this hits, then this. If this is blocked, then this. And that's essentially what it is. It's like reading one of those old choose your own adventure books, but you're always choosing the best possible scenario for each thing. And you know, if you're good at it, you can get some really nasty stuff going. But ultimately, if you're good at the game, you don't really need a flowchart. You pretty much have that knowledge in the back of your mind while you play. But you know, I mean, it is what it is. Essentially, a flowchart is usually you see it on a line diagram. You'll do like if jab is hit, yes or no, and you'll do left or right, and you go down the word web, you know, the flowchart. And if it hit, then you do what? Do you do magic four? Do you do another jab? Do you step? Do you throw? You know, so on and so forth. And you basically make these choices to try to mix up your opponent and have them eat damage and also get frustrated, and make sure that the big damage moves are what are going to happen. You know, so hitting low multiple times and then going for like a mid-safe launcher and seeing what happens. Or, you know, interrupting their moves over and over again using a flowchart of when something hits, do something else that's safe or something that you know, hits them low or whatever. And it's very useful. It is useful. I don't want people to think that I'm downplaying flowcharts and that they're garbage. They're not necessarily garbage, but it really depends on the player. It also depends on, you know, your opponent, who you're playing against, and what your environment is. Like I said earlier, if you're playing online, you'll see a lot of flowcharting. If you are playing in big tournaments with big name players, some of them do flowchart. Most of them will not admit to it, though. Most of them will just say, yeah, you know, I get a feel for my opponent. I play a few free matches and casuals, kind of feel people out, feel out how the character's playing out, and how the mix-ups are happening, and then go from there. And that's normally what you're going to hear good players saying. And like I said, some people do flowcharting, some don't. You know, I don't want to throw my opinion out there and get blasted. You know, I personally don't. I don't really care for flowcharting. I think it's a cool concept, but it's very difficult to do a perfect flowchart that works every time. It's really you modifying the flowchart as you play. So it's just something to keep in mind. If you hear people, you know, talking about or throwing out flowcharts, that's what that is. So welcome to Tekken, where we have all sorts of shenanigans and flowcharts. So what else has been going on? Oh, what else can I talk about? Oh, I had guys asking about on the stream about throws. So I don't know if someone got on or was just, I think it was an email, actually. I think someone emailed me about throw breaks. And I don't know if it was someone I played personally or if it was a player that has just been personally having issues with throw breaks. But they were asking me, you know, how do you break throw? You could tell that they didn't really understand the concept of how it works. And that's fine. I'm not picking on anybody. I actually rather have noob, or I don't want to say noob and make it sound derogatory, newer players, people that are inexperienced in some aspect of the game, I'd rather have them message me or get on the stream and just watch and listen. Because usually we can get into some pretty heated discussions about stuff, you know, and shit talk and stuff. But sometimes there's a lot of good nuggets of information that we try to put out. So this guy or gal, whoever it was asking me, how does throw breaking work? How do you do it, essentially? And also, you know, what do you do after a throw break? And that's interesting that they brought that up, because a lot of players, they basically break a throw and then it's neutral game again and they don't know what the hell to do. So I give them props for asking that secondary question. The first question is, there's a simple answer and there's a longer answer, and I'm going to try to do a little bit of both for time's sake. The simple answer is you have to train your eyes to visually distinguish which arms lead on a throw. And if you don't quite understand what I mean, and it's hard to do it over a podcast, try to explain to you the visual discernment of a throw or the visual acuity you need to be able to see it. But when you see an opponent throw, for example, let's just do basic throws right now. 1+3, which is square and X, or X and A if you're playing on Xbox, or 1+3 if you're using, you know, the arcade lingo and the competitive fighting game scene Tekken lingo. 1+3 is almost always, well, it is always going to lead with your left arm. And so if you watch, if you go into practice mode and you start mashing out 1+3, or you set the opponent on defensive trainer to do 1+3 throws, you're always going to see them lead out with their left arm. Or their hip will shift and their left hip portion of their body will turn. Their torso will turn that way. If you start getting used to, you know, hitting the arm button or the hand button that corresponds with the throw, you will break the throw. You have a small window to do it, and you just have to get used to visually picking up which arm it is and hitting that button. So, for example, if it's a 1+3 throw, square and X throw together, you would be hitting square to break that throw. Okay. If it's the triangle and circle button or the Y and B button on an Xbox, it's going to be Y or triangle to break that throw because you're going to be leading with the right hand. When you get into the special breaks, the special throws, a lot of times special throws, for example, Law's down forward 1+2 throw. That throw, if you watch Law do it, he leads with both arms about the same distance. They're equally both shoved out. It's like he's grabbing your shoulders. He's grabbing both sides of your body at the same time. You would then break that with 1+2 together. So square and triangle together. You'd have to hit both buttons in unison at the same time to break that throw. Now, there are throws out there, and I'm sure there are already fanboys trying to get ready to grease their palms on the keyboard about blowing me up. There are throws in the game that do not follow that pattern. There are throws that, especially when you're back turned, what's the word I'm looking for? They're stealthed, essentially. They're not leading with the arm you think they would. So sometimes if you're back turned and you lead with a right throw, you might go with a right throw every time, and your character will use that right arm, but sometimes the left throw will be the right arm too, is an example. Other throws, some special throws, like Giant Swing, I believe, and a couple others. Oh, actually, maybe it's not Giant Swing. I'm trying to remember. Well, I guess Shining Wizard is a good example. So Shining Wizard, if you do the throw input, it's whiffed, you'll see both arms come out. And I think that's a double button break, so that's not a good example. There are throws in the game that you have to break in special ways. A good example is Lars throws, where you have to tap down. Some of Lars' throws, like his airborne throws, you have to tap down to break out of. That's the one where he cartwheels over your head and tries to slam you into the ground. You have to tap down to break out of that. Kunimitsu's throw, where she flips up over your back, you duck to break that. So she'll flip up over with her legs, grab you by the neck, and, like, you know, do some sort of wrestling move on your head or whatever. So you break that by tapping down. And what that does is your character crouches, she rolls off your back, and it looks really cool. But there are throws that are ambiguous. That's the word I was looking for. They're ambiguous throws. They're throws that you cannot tell off the top of your head or just looking at it what is the correct break for it. And what the thing you have to do there is you have to think about it in a, like me personally, I go for high damage throw breaks. So if I'm playing a guy who's using ambiguous throw setups where you really can't tell which throw it is because their arms are identical, they might do a left throw break, a right throw break, and a double throw break. And maybe their left and right throws are both square. They're both one break. So it's really hard to tell which one's which. You're going to go for the one that's going to give you the most damage. So let's say with Law, their most damaging throw usually is knee lift, okay, his launching throw. I might be doing, if I'm playing against a Law for the first time and I don't really know the player that well, I might be going for 1+2 breaks. If I start seeing some some throw mix-ups mixed into the game, okay, in the match. You know, if I'm by the wall and Law's throwing me, I might be breaking with one because that move wall splats and when wall breaks, balcony breaks. So these are just examples. This comes down to character knowledge and gameplay knowledge, just time in the game. If you have time in the game and you've played enough, you can understand what throws are good with what character, and that's going to give you a little strategic edge to know what to break where and why. And, you know, that's another thing, and that's the long answer. The short answer is watch their hands, break whatever hand they lead with. That's the easy way to break a throw if you don't know what the hell's going on. The long answer is there are ambiguous throws. There are specialty throws that you can only break certain ways. There are some throws you can't break at all. An example is Eddie Gordo's handstand 3+4. That one there's no break for. It's the one where he kicks you repeatedly in the head and stuff. But the thing about those throws, to make the game somewhat balanced, is their mobility is limited in handstand, arguably. And also, the frames for that throw, the activation frames on it, are a little longer. And so you can actually see the move coming out a little faster than if it was just a random throw. Also, it has a really short range. You have to really be like right next to handstand position to have that move hit you. And if they do it wrong, or they're mashing 3+4 out trying to throw you, you can hop kick them. So there you go. So that's my little spiel about the diagrams and news going on with Tekken right now in the community and in the area, and also a little bit about throw breaks because I had someone ask. So there you guys are. Have a great night. Keep playing, and I will talk to you guys soon. Have a good night.